Thank you for downloading from Ravi Zacharias International Ministries. Support for this podcast comes from your generous gifts and donations. You can find out more about Ravi Zacharias and the team at www.rzim.org.
Does not end with a propositional answer. It ends with an experiential answer. It is the presence of God that he encountered that enabled him to go beyond just what he knew to the actuality of living it out. From creator, designer, ultimately to strengthen and restore on the basis of what he knew, he could follow God for what he didn't know.
Pain and suffering stand in the way of many people who reject God. It's a difficult objection to answer, but if there's one from history who can ease reservations about God's existence, it would be Job. Hello and welcome to Let My People Think with author and apologist Ravi Zacharias. Today, the conclusion of Ravi's message, The Ultimate Answer, Jesus Christ. It's a message derived from a book that he wrote a couple of years ago titled, Has Christianity Failed You? In writing that book, Ravi talked to many former Christians who said they just couldn't square the existence of God with all the pain and suffering in the world. Last week, Ravi began his lecture with a philosophical look at answers to suffering, then to what other religions have to say. This week, on to the main part of his message. What is the Christian response to pain? For his text, Ravi is looking at the life of Job and the lessons his story revealed. Here's Ravi with the conclusion of his message, The Ultimate Answer, Jesus Christ.
You see, the problem of evil, as Gabriel Marcel would have said, follow me closely because this is not an evasive answer, it is an important answer. He said, going to Mars is a problem. Falling in love is a mystery. And the problem of evil is not a problem, it is a mystery. It gets subjectively locked into the question and is inextricably bound to it. And when you get subjectively locked into the question, you are not outside of it, you are in it. And total objectivity in that sense is virtually impossible unless you find some semi-transcendent point from which you can look into the issue and unravel the mystery here. So it is not a problem you can ultimately solve, it is a problem you have to resolve. Because it encroaches upon its own data. And I want to take you to an Old Testament passage within the time that I have and show to you how it is that this man actually dealt with it. So there was a man called Job who struggled with this, and he struggled with it long before you and I did. And he felt disappointed in the way God had brought things into being in his life. He felt he had walked in an upright manner, he'd done that which was right, and now he felt that God had failed him. And his wife comes to him and gives him the most undesirable advice. She says to him, why don't you renounce God and die? And then the biggest blunder took place when three of his friends decided to give him some advice. And so God comes to Job personally. And God begins to deal with Job and answers him. And as God begins to deal with Job, I find it fascinating on the logic that God applies here. The first thing he does is he opens him up with a series of questions. And in that series of questions, he basically says this. He says, Job, where were you when the foundations of the earth were laid? Do you have an answer to the majesty and the magnificence of creation and the intricacy of it? Do you have an answer to that? The naturalists who are trying to destroy your faith in a creator know exactly what they're doing. If they can take away the creator, they've taken away from you the starting point to the response of all of your questions. They know exactly what they're doing. And so young minds go into the university campus and a whole world of theology is suddenly being rattled in their mindset, all on one happen to the heart. Does God really exist? Did he bring this world into being? Do I need that paradigm? You know, one of the fine minds in our time, John Polkinghorne, personally known to John Lennox and teaching at Queen's College, Cambridge, in the years that I was there, during the time that I was there, one of the great quantum physicists. And I remember Polkinghorne making a comment something like this. He said, all of the constants and the contingencies in the early picoseconds of the formation of the universe demanded such precision and fine-tuning. Such precision and fine-tuning. And he went through the list of them, and he illustrated with all of them, and one stands out in my mind. He said the relationship between the expansion and contraction forces in the early picoseconds of the universe had to be so precise, and the margin of error so small, that it would be like taking aim at a 1 square inch object at the other end of the known universe, 20 billion light years away, and hitting it bullseye. And then he gave this typical English understatement. He said, gentlemen, there's no free lunch. Somebody has to pay. And we've lost that mystery and marvel of what it is that we see in the universe. I think of just the experience of us, for us as a family, in the last 3 or 4 days. My daughter Naomi was recently married, and in June she was married in Italy, and her husband, a fine young man, worked with Campus Crusade for several years, and Naomi and he now are at Oxford. And 2 nights ago, we were sitting in our hotel room in Oxford, and she sends me a text message, or he sends me a text message, and they're sitting right in front of me. And, you know, I try not to read my BlackBerry when the family is there, but I just opened it up quickly just to check the message, and it was from Drew, sitting across from me, my son-in-law. So I said, this message is from you. He said, yeah. I said, you want me to read it? He said, sure. I thought, boy, this is strange. You know, we're sitting here talking to each other. He's text messaging me. And we got talking about something, and I just put it back. I forgot to read it. And about 15 minutes go by, and they're getting rather antsy, and they text my wife sitting next to me. Well, here's the story. Finally, we look at the message, and he tells the date when he had first met Naomi, and underneath that is a strange-looking contraption that I had never seen in my life. And it just said, the sign there was positive. So I don't know what this is about. Never seen it in my life. Well, the story was, she found out the day before that they were going to expect their first child. The test was positive. Looked up and said, is this true? And her eyes are just bright as anything. You could see the stars reflecting in there. My son, who's in the audience, he was sitting in the room there. And my other oldest daughter, she just jumped up and down with her feet. I said, is this for real? What is this about? A new life. That's what it's about. A new life. The majesty and the intricacy of it. I remember speaking with Francis Collins at Johns Hopkins, the co-mapper of the human DNA and his 3.1 billion pieces of information. And we were the two Christians on the program. Everybody else was quite antithetical to our belief. And just before I stood up, he spoke. And his last presentation for the last 2 minutes was 2 slides. On one side of the slide which he displayed was a beautiful stained glass window from Yorkminster Cathedral. Brilliant, thousands of pieces converging in magnificent colors. pointing out to the grand capacity of the artisan. And they're all wowed by it. And then he covers that up and opens the left side of the screen, which is even more spectacular than the one you've seen. He says, do you know what you're looking at? Nobody did. He said, you're looking at a vertical section of the human DNA. There was a gasp in the audience. He sent me a copy of that colored slide. And I remember sitting there all of a sudden in a moment saying to myself, my word, that which I'm looking at is because of which I'm able to look at it. That which has stricken me with awe is because of which I'm capable of being awe-stricken. There was a subject-object confusion for a moment. Until you realize in the grand mystery of a sovereign God who gives you that semi-transcendent perspective to rise above, not to be able to comprehensively understand, but meaningfully understand, you see what is there in man that you're mindful of him or the Son of Man. What is there in you? You know what there is in you? The majesty and the imprint of the Creator God who's made you in his image. Let all the earth be silent before him. Do you know what Francis Collins did? This was one of the most prestigious universities in the world. After he showed that second slide, do you know what he did? He just went over, picked up his guitar, and sang a gospel song. No other way to respond except worship. So I say to you, the Creator Designer is the first part of the solution. But not only but does he come to you with a Creator Designer, he comes to you secondly as a Revealer Comforter. He said, I'd heard of you by the hearing of my ear. Now I have seen you, I abhor myself and I'm horrified. Ladies and gentlemen, this may sound like old-fashioned answers to you, but I'll tell you what. I keep asking myself the question, what has happened in our churches today where you hear so little about the experience of Christ? Now I live in him, and he lives in me. I came to know Christ when I was 17 years old on a bed of suicide. No argument will ever knock me off what happened that day. No argument will ever knock me off what happened that day from a person totally disinterested and uninterested in the things of God. To suddenly finding myself in a bed where a man has placed a Bible on my lap, which I couldn't hold because of my dehydrated body with the poison that was in me. And to simply pray that prayer and invite this Christ with all the knowledge that I did not have, but enough that I did have, to invite him to become the shepherd of my soul and to change my very heart. Not only what it did, but what it wanted to do. And to walk out of there 5 days later as a totally transformed man. This experience of the new birth, this experience of the encounter, is very real in life. This Christ is not merely the creator of the universe, but the recreator of your own life. I've heard of you by the hearing of my ear. Now I've seen you. Bore myself. Job has that divine encounter. I could belabor this point, I won't. So he comes as Creator Designer, Revealer Comforter, thirdly and quickly, as Mediator and Savior. As Mediator and Savior, I know that my Redeemer lives and I shall see him in my flesh. About 2 weeks ago, I was speaking in Mumbai and was invited to speak first to the Bollywood stars and after that at the National Film Institute, the largest in Asia, producing young actors, actresses, producers. There was a renowned atheist, one of the best-known producers in the country. They were shocked when he walked into the room. And the reason he walked in was the previous night his wife had come to a meeting where I was speaking at, and God so touched her heart, she told him, you better get on there and listen to this talk. He sat right in the front row. My colleague Kryn was there, my wife was there, and my son, daughter-in-law to be, we were all there. And this guy sat right in the front row. And after the talk was over, I was asked to speak on the subject beyond the box office, the influence of media upon culture. At the end of it, he said something that hurt me quite a bit, but I had no option. He took me aside and he said to me, "Your talk was both inspiring and disappointing." He said, "I came here to listen to something that would help me deal with what goes on inside of me. But you're dealing with something so external." And the president of the institution was standing to my left and he was standing to my right. I said, "This gentleman was my host. He had never heard me before, but took the words of others and invited me to speak to the whole student body, and he gave me my subject. Do you really think I should have violated his invitation and gone beyond certain boundaries to take the liberty of all I would love to have talked about?" I said, "I'm honored that he trusted me. I did not want to violate the trust. If he ever invited me back to speak on the subject you talked about, I'd be happy to do it." And the man looked at me and said, "Come back here and do a whole series on it." What is he talking about? How do you break free from the enslavement of evil and sin? And it begins by recognizing what the Redeemer does for you and me. I am so convinced and so certain of what I'm telling you now that there's no university campus in the world where I'd be embarrassed to state it. The cross of Jesus Christ is the centerpiece of the gospel. And if you don't present the cross, you've not presented the gospel. There is no cross in Islam. In fact, they don't even want us to have it in Christianity. There is no cross. There's no sacrifice in Hinduism. Krishna talks about it, calls for it in the Gita, that there needs to be a sacrifice. But he does not give one to us. You see, the heinousness of sin and the need for forgiveness and the supremacy of love, the indescribability of evil, the contingent, the need for justice, all of these come together in one place in the cross so that you can be forgiven and I can be forgiven, and that which is on the inside. I think it was Bonhoeffer said something like this. Karl Barth. He said, "Sin scorches us most after it has come under the scrutinizing light of God's forgiveness, not before." Amazing from a man like Barth, that it scorches us the most after we realize what it is we've really done, for which we're being offered forgiveness. And when Job says, "I know that my Redeemer lives," he recognizes there's a cleansing that takes place. "He came to my desk with a quivering lip. The lesson was done. Have you a new sheet for me, dear teacher? I've spoiled this one. I took his sheet all soiled and blotted and gave him a new one all unspotted. And into his tired heart I cried, 'Do better now, my child.' I went to the throne with a trembling heart. The day was done. Have you a new day for me, dear master? I've spoiled this one. He took my day all soiled and blotted, gave me a new one all unspotted. And into my tired heart he cried, 'Do better now, my child.' Neither do I condemn thee. Go and sin no more." See the gospel emerging in such an old book that there's a mediator. I'll move to my final point, but I just want to belabor this for just another moment. I remember being in Cambodia, and I won't go into the details now. Maybe I'll share it later. But I remember seeing a play in which right lost and wrong won. The innocent struggled and the evil triumphed. It was my last night there. It was 1974, before the horror of massacre just began, when the Khmer Rouge came in. And I was walking back after curfew and looked at my interpreter, and he said, "What do you think of the play?" I said, "I don't like it." I didn't like it. I said, "I love the aesthetics, love the dancers, love the music, love the acting. I just didn't like the ending." He said, "You know why you didn't like the ending?" I said, "Why?" He said, "Because you don't understand how painfully true this is to our experience. This is what Cambodia has become. This is our story," he said. I said to him, what do you think was the answer to that? And this guy was a non-believer. He said to me, Mr. Zacharias, I've heard you speak enough now, and I'm convinced you're right. What that play was lacking was a savior. The Redeemer. And you move to the final point. You have ultimately the strengthener and restorer. So you have creator, designer, revealer, comforter, mediator, savior, and finally strengthener and restorer. On the basis of what he knew, he was able to trust God for what he didn't know. On the basis of what he knew, he was able to trust God for what he didn't know. I want to close with two illustrations and see if they apply or not. One of the greatest preachers or writers who's ever lived comes right out of your homeland, James Stewart. One of my favorite writers. James Stewart said this. It is a glorious phrase in the New Testament that he led captivity captive. The very triumphs of his foes, it means he used for their defeat. He compelled their dark achievements to serve his ends, not theirs. They nailed him to the tree, not knowing that by the very act they were bringing the world to his feet. They gave him a cross, not guessing that he would make it a throne. They flung him outside the gates to die, not knowing that in that very moment they were lifting up all the gates of the universe to let the King of Glory come in. They thought to root out his doctrines, not understanding that they were implanting imperishably in the hearts of men the very name they intended to destroy. They thought they had God with his back to the wall, pinned down and helpless and defeated. They did not know that it was God himself who had tracked them down to that place. He did not conquer in spite of the dark mystery of evil. He conquered through it. Amazing statement that God conquered through it. And nothing better describes that than the cross. Let me end with this. I live in Atlanta, Georgia. Not far from where I live is a young girl. I think she's about 15 or so now, 15 or 16 maybe. She was born with a very rare disease. It's called CIPA, C-I-P-A, congenital insensitivity to pain with anhidrosis. Two things. You have no response to pain, and your very sweat glands don't function. You don't even perspire. If she took a knife and cut it, she would bleed, but she would not feel any pain. A handful of children in this world have been born with CIPA. It's dangerous to have that for many reasons, some of which may not be obvious to you and me. She could be standing in front of a stove and unknowingly put her hand on a live burner and actually burn her whole arm off before she even knows it. She's never allowed to play sports without somebody watching her, lest she suffer an injury and a cut and starts bleeding and doesn't know it. Her name is Ashlyn Blocker. Her mother was interviewed on television, and she ended her interview by this. She said, every night I get on my knees and plead with God to give back to my daughter the ability to feel pain. Ladies and gentlemen, if in this human body pain is the indicator that keeps you from something greater, is it impossible for an infinite God to, through pain, remind us of how evil evil really is, and through the cross then triumph over it to show you and me to the greatest thing that he's given, love, forgiveness, and the glory of his presence in the first installment now and the final installment eternally. The book of Job does not end with a propositional answer. It ends with an experiential answer. It is the presence of God that he encountered that enabled him to go beyond just what he knew to the actuality of living it out. From creator, designer, ultimately to strengthen and restore, on the basis of what he knew, he could follow God for what he didn't know. So if you're walking away, let the grand weaver pull your threads back for you and show you he has a design far greater than you and I could ever imagine. He will take you through the dark night of the soul, ultimately to the celestial city, where he puts that robe on you and gives you the map and gives you that presence that only He can give and bring to you the fulfillment of the deepest longings of your heart.
Pain and suffering don't have to be stumbling blocks to your faith or determine the value of your relationship with God. The one who ordered the world is also the one who can strengthen and restore. If you'd like to purchase a copy of the message you've just heard in its entirety, call us at 1-800-448-6766 and ask for the message, The Ultimate Answer, Jesus Christ. That number once again is 1-800-448-6766 and ask for the message by name. Or you can order online at rzim.org, where you'll find information on all of our resources, including the book that was the foundation of this message, Has Christianity Failed You? And while you're on our website, let me also suggest you check out our newest offering, Ask. Ask is a DVD curriculum built to reach students of high school age and up. It provides students with the critical tools necessary for understanding their own faith and for investigating and evaluating differing worldviews. You can order online. To send us any questions or comments by mail or to make a donation, write to RZIM, Post Office Box 921-939, Norcross, Georgia, 30010. Let My People Think is a listener-supported radio ministry and is furnished by Ravi Zacharias International Ministries, Atlanta, Georgia.